This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and do we have a program lined up for you? Of course, we have this week's Words to the Wise. We'll have a look at our week in review. On today's show, we'll also delve into finance with our special friend, Mr. Leibel Sternbach. Anthony Taylor, who is a wonderful volunteer for AARP Minnesota, he'll stop in and he'll talk about age-friendly states and communities. We'll talk about high coffee prices. Are you a coffee drinker? Maybe you're having some right now. Who knows? But we'll talk about how the prices, like everything else, is going up. We'll talk vaccine clinics from the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center. They're having a big clinic coming up in just a few days. And we'll share some details with you about how one state in the union is dealing with COVID. And Joe McKenzie stops in today. He'll talk to you about what to do when you find yourself at the crossroads of your career. I'm Freddie Bell, and our show starts right now. And we turn now our attention to the streets. And when I say the streets, I'm talking about driver safety. And with us right now is Alan Ainsworth, who is the Deputy State Coordinator, Section 2 Minnesota for AARP's Driver Safety Program. Welcome to the program, and driver safety, especially now, should be top of mind, not only for those who are 55 plus, but I would imagine, sir, for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, deaths on the road in Minnesota have got worse and worse. We got to 500 last year, unfortunately, up from 368 last year, and 30% of those were older drivers, so we're very worried about that.
Well, I know a lot of people are talking about the wonderful driver safety program that AARP is a part of, and I know that COVID precautions are still preventing the in-person driver safety classes, but it is still nonetheless very effective.
Yep. We're still working on online classes, but the in-person classes, I have like 100 volunteers who are very frustrated that they haven't taught for nearly 2 years. But, of course, AARP has been very careful because, we're teaching to the high-risk group. So our plan is to start opening in-person classes as soon as the numbers go down. We're going to do that by county, and we're going to sort of use the CDC infection tracking map to cover us on that.
Everyone, we're talking with Alan Ainsworth, who is the Deputy State Coordinator for Section 2 Minnesota for the AARP Driver Safety Program. And there is a bit of an incentive to continue with the classes, even though they're online.
Yeah, right. We're actually providing, because of COVID, we're providing a 25% extra discount. So the normal price will be $22.95 for members and $29.95 for non-members. So they will get an extra 5%, $5 saving.
Well, you still, even with the COVID numbers, you still have quite a few people who participated in the driver safety program last year.
Yeah. The online program, we actually taught over 18,000 Minnesotans. But, you know, the bad news is that's relative to our normal average of about 35,000 a year.
Oh, my.
So we're hoping to get people to access our online program at arpdriversafety.org.
Okay, that's arpdriversafety.org. Do you have classes underway right now, Alan?
We're actually starting to offer virtual classes now. So these are run by live instructors over Zoom. You know, the nice thing is that obviously people can take this in the safety of their own home.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of better than the online classes because the participants can ask questions and get more interaction, you know, more like an in-person class. And if people are interested in that, they can go to arp.cvent.com/dsvirtual.
Well, a lot of ways to get involved. It's interesting. So you can have the virtual classes and you can have the classes that are not led by instructor, just self-paced. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Do you have a final thought for our audience this morning who I know they're interested in driver safety? A final thought about safety or anything that's on your mind related to COVID and just being safe in general?
Yeah, I think, you know, because of the COVID situation, as I mentioned, the numbers of deaths on the road and accidents in general have gone way up. So it's important that people, if they haven't, you know, most of us of a certain age, you know, haven't had any lessons since we've been like 40 years. So they need to get an update and understand better the new laws and so on. And we've updated our curriculum completely this year. We're excited that there's a whole bunch of new videos that help people understand the driving strategies and updated state laws and things like discussion on the impact of drugs and alcohol. So all of those things are really important.
Even the new technology that we're finding in automobiles these days.
Yeah, you're right. That's one of the many confusing things that us older people get involved with. But, you know, we cover that in the classes. We also have a smart driver tech program, which is a separate program that, again, is online. That gives everybody more of an idea of how this technology works or doesn't work.
How can we get more information about these classes, either virtual or online?
Okay, so the best place is AARP Driver Safety, or one word, .org. And that would take you to multiple places where you can get the information on the classes. Plus, there's a lot of good videos on there that even if you don't take the classes, you can at least get some feel for what the classes are about.
That's wonderful. That's Alan Ainsworth. We're going to have to leave it right there. He is the Deputy State Coordinator, Section 2, Minnesota, for AARP Driver Safety. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Freddie.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell. This is Appointed Listening. Why? Because we give you information that you can't really get anywhere else in such a compacted form. And right now, let's talk to Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects. He turns candidates into contenders. You can reach him online at rippleconnects.com, by phone at 763-438-1621, or on Twitter at Joe McKenzie. Joe McKenzie, happy weekend, and I'm glad you're here this weekend.
Thank you, Freddie Bell. I'm glad to be here and talking to you and the New Beginnings listeners about careers and going forward and strategies to live your best career.
So let's talk about that. Let's build on that idea. So we're talking to a lot of people who are 50 plus. There are some younger, some a little bit older. And you've stacked up a lot of history, a lot of time with different companies or maybe the same company over time. But what happens when you reach a crossroads in your career? Maybe it's because of the pandemic. Maybe it's because of health concerns. Maybe it's downsizing or right-sizing. Or I remember one president of a company called it rationalization. I had to go look that up. I didn't understand what that meant. But let's talk about the steps you can take when you've reached that point, when you begin to wonder, what does the next phase of my career look like? So what do you do? What's the first step that you should do when you think that you're approaching or you find yourself in that crosshair of a crossroad?
Well, I think over time you start to wonder what that your next career looks like, and you start to wonder, am I meant to do this my entire career? Is there something more? And I think reflection kind of starts occupying our time when we start to think that, well, maybe I've reached a crossroads in my career. So I do think reflection, knowing that, hey, let's give this an ample amount of time to think about, should I become my own boss or be self-employed? Should I go back to school and pursue some different degree programs? Or even just, hey, can I take these transferable skills from this industry to another? I think it's a healthy step, because it's not just, you're not jumping to jump, but you're giving it some thought. So I think the first step is reflection. And it's probably, if you're starting to reach a crossroads, I think a lot of people start thinking about what else could I be doing. But I do think very intentional reflection period is important to determine what are some of those next steps after reflection, Freddie. That's, and I've been there. I've thought about it. I've read about it. And And I made those types of moves, but it did take a lot of time of thinking, just reflecting upon who I was and who do I see myself becoming, and so forth. So I think reflection, it's a simple step. It's actionable, but I think it's a first step.
It's interesting, everyone. We're talking with Joe McKenzie. We're talking about what do you do when you've reached a crossroads in your career. And Joe McKenzie just told us that it's the first step is to take that time for reflection. I've got another idea. We talked about a real life example. I know of a young man who's at a crossroads in his career, and a person that he worked with has gone to go to another company, and this individual reached back and says, well, look, we've got an opportunity at this company. You can do similarly what you've been doing. It's more money. I know you've been there for a few years, but this is an opportunity to get a leg up. And he is hesitating, but it sounds like he's doing that first step that you talked about. He's reflecting.
Yes, that's a critical step, Freddie, because we just don't want to jump to jump. We don't want to jump into a degree program. We don't want to just start a business, because all that takes additional thought. And most people don't know what their transferable skills are, because if we're in one industry, we may not know what another industry requires. And so reflection, give it that adequate time to make sure that this is a good move for yourself. Because if you're reaching a crossroads in your career, Freddie, it's probably over time that you've reached it. It wasn't just one week. Mm-hmm. It might have been several years that you've been thinking about it. You've seen others make a change. Yes, absolutely. Reflection has to be there, and it's a critical step.
We're talking about what to do when you've reached a crossroads in your career for any number of reasons. But I also would understand or believe that leaning into your bench of advocates has a major role in this as well.
It certainly does, Freddie. The people that are on your bench of career advocates will provide that honest feedback. They want you to do well, and they're not going to try to steer you wrong. They're going to say, I think this skill set, this leadership, this what you bring to the table be perfect for this industry. But they also might be the first people to say, I don't know if you'd really do well in that, because this is how this industry plays out, and I don't see you thriving in that. So that leaning in to those career advocates that are on your bench will help you to discern, to bring more clarity, especially when you're at that crossroads. And I know firsthand many of the people, this civic group that I was a part of, helped me to learn that I was well suited to go into Minnesota's nonprofit sector. And it was because of those advocates that gave me that honest feedback about who I was. And at that moment in time, I was in the competitive office equipment market. So I was not in the nonprofit. I was volunteering in the nonprofit, but I was in high-pressure sales and doing lots of traveling. So, yes, lean into those advocates. They're going to give you that honest feedback.
Interesting. We only have about 30 seconds left. The 4 points we should remember as a takeaway from today.
First, ample time for reflection. Start to get some clarity on where you want to go. Don't overlook the opportunity to volunteer in your community to test some of your transferable skills. Consider bridge employment if you need to buy yourself some more time in regards to this process. And obviously include your bench of advocates to help you with that honest feedback on where you're going as you've reached that crossroads in your career.
That's Joe McKenzie. Well said. We've talked about what do you do when you've reached the crossroads in your career. You can learn more by going to RippleConnects.com. And this is New Beginnings.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell. And as you're listening to New Beginnings, perhaps you have your earbuds in and you're exercising as you listen this weekend. There's a new study that says for older patients in hospitals, exercise is the key. And that study also shows that physical activity helps with pain and with recovery. Hospitalization often spells the beginning of the end for older patients' mobility. Bed rest could be the blame, and in-hospital exercise programs could provide the jumpstart older patients need to maintain their functionality at home, that according to a study in the JAMA Internal Medicine. Researchers also looked at 200 older patients in three geriatric hospitals in Spain. While hospitalized, half of the patients exercised twice a day for 20 minutes on three consecutive days of their stay using a program called Vivifrail. The protocol, which was designed for patients over 70, focuses on strength, gait, and balance. According to the protocol's website, it is used by more than 5,000 healthcare providers throughout the European Union. It was developed to help older people maintain autonomy by preventing frailty and falls. Participants used resistance training machines in the morning and did independent, low-key exercises such as walking and leg extensions in the evening. Their counterparts received the usual hospital care. Both groups were assessed on a variety of scales such as pain, hand grip, mental state, and muscle power. Those in the control group stayed in the hospital the same amount of time, but their outcomes were different. While control saw modest gains in physical performance and pain, they were outpaced by their counterparts who experienced less pain and twice the physical performance gains. Improvements in activities of daily living in the older or frail patients requires a more intensive approach than merely promoting mobility that, according to the authors of the journal, bed rest increasingly appears to be a culprit in post-hospitalization declines. One 2008 study found that just 10 days of bed rest led to a substantial loss of strength and power. For those who can move their bodies during and after hospitalization, the evidence suggests physical exertion is a powerful medicine. And as we're talking about exercising, walking a mere 10 minutes a day could ward off premature death. There's a new analysis that is finding that a little extra exercise could save more than 100,000 lives annually. If almost all of us started walking for an extra 10 minutes a day, we could collectively prevent more than 111,000 deaths every year. That according to an enlightening new study of movement and mortality. It's also published in JAMA. The study used data about physical activity and death rates for thousands of American adults to estimate how many deaths every year might be averted if everyone exercised more. The results indicate that even a little extra physical activity by each of us could potentially stave off hundreds of thousands of premature deaths over the coming years. In that new study, researchers at the National Cancer Institute and the CDC decided to explore what might happen to death rates if people started moving around more. But first, the researchers needed to establish a baseline of how many deaths might be related to too little movement. They began gathering data from the ongoing National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, which over time asks a representative sample of the population about their lives and their health. It also provides some of them with activity trackers to objectively measure how much they move. The researchers then pooled information from over 4,800 participants from different ethnicities, male and female, who ranged in age from 40 to 85. All had joined the survey between 2003 and 2006 and had worn an activity monitor for a week. Based on that data, the researchers grouped people according to how many minutes they walked or otherwise moved most days. They also checked people's names against a national death registry to establish mortality rates for the various activity levels. Using those results, they began creating a series of statistical what-ifs. Suppose, the researchers asked, everyone who was capable of exercising began exercising moderately, such as by walking briskly for an extra 10 minutes a day, on top of how much or little they currently worked out. How many deaths might not happen? The researchers made adjustments to account statistically for those people who were too frail or otherwise unable to easily move around. They also considered age, education, smoking status, diet, body mass index, and other health factors. Then, the researchers ran the same statistical scenario with everyone working out for an extra 20 minutes a day, and finally for an extra 30 minutes a day. Quite a few people would live longer in any of these scenarios, they found. According to the modeling, if every capable adult walked briskly or otherwise exercise for an additional 10 minutes a day, more than 111,000 deaths annually across the country, or about 7% of all deaths in a typical year, might be avoided. I hope this is grist for you to consider exercising at least another 10 minutes per day. I'm Freddie Bell. This is New Beginnings. Appointed listening each week at this time, and I hope that you'll consider asking a friend to join you as well.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Minneapolis Public Housing is right now on New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, appointed listening with you this weekend as we now turn our attention to the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center and the property manager there, Kitty Harris. She is with us this morning. And before we get into our subject matter, how long has the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center been serving community residents?
Good morning, Freddie. Happy Saturday. Always a pleasure to be with you. And the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center has been open for the last 10 years, serving North Minneapolis and the surrounding Twin Cities.
And it's named after the original director.
Yes, the center is named after Ms. Cora McCorvey, who frequently comes and visits us and walks around our walking track. She was the first executive director for Minneapolis Public Housing, and she was in that role in conjunction with other city roles for 39 years.
All right. And you've got a big event. I know that you've been working hand in hand with the Minnesota Department of Health, and this virus is still upon us, and you're still doing some great work to try to help to keep people safe.
Absolutely. The Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center has been open the entire time that the pandemic has been going on, continuing to serve our community and our patients, our members, our clients. And so we've held several vaccine clinics at the center, as well as several booster clinics at the center. And so we're excited to partner with the Lowell Center of Minnesota. And we're going to be doing a huge vaccine clinic on Sunday, February 27th at the center.
So this is, you call it huge. What makes it huge this time around?
The reason why I say huge is because this clinic, we're anticipating that we're going to be able to serve over 300 members of the community. The Lowell Center has been working just so tirelessly to provide COVID-19 test kits for the community and having different events, not just in North Minneapolis, but in South Minneapolis as well. And so every time we have an event, the goal is always for us to do over 100 vaccines. But this time we were able to secure 300 vaccines. And so we're very excited to host this booster clinic for the community.
Tell us about the team that will be administering the vaccines.
So the Lowell Center is one of our newest partners here at Cora McCorvey. They've been with us a little bit over a year. And so they moved in the middle of the pandemic and they got right to work. And so they're going to be partnering with the Asian Media Association, as well as other health and wellness clinics within the city of Minneapolis. And we're going to also be doing this vaccine clinic. We're also going to have a food distribution, which they've worked with some food shelves to help with the food insecurity that has been a result of the pandemic. And so that's why I said this is going to be a huge clinic for us, because not only are we doing boosters, we're doing food. And of course, if people have other resources that they need us to get connected with, this is just an opportunity for, while they're at the center, for us to just really talk about the wraparound services. And so we're very happy that the Lowell Center has stepped forward and continue to host these clinics and these food distribution events in a very real way for North Minneapolis.
With as many people as you're expecting, is registration required, Kitty?
Yes, we would like people to register, so we want to make sure that we have enough food packs available for families. And so people can give us a call at 612-374-4967. They can get more information about the vaccine clinic. They can get more information about the food distribution, and they can just get access to any questions about general services that they might need assistance with, and we'll help to guide them.
All right. That date and time one more time.
That date for that clinic is going to be Sunday, February the 27th, and we're going to start having appointments at about 9 a.m. So, again, registration is required because we want to maximize how we handle the flow of people coming into the facility. And so you can call at 612-374-4967 to get information about registration and what all is required for you to get assistance that day.
All right. That's Kitty Harris, the property manager for the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center, and you're listening to New Beginnings. Did you know that a negative COVID-19 test is not a free pass? A test is only a moment in time. If you tested negative but now you have symptoms, stay home and away from others and get tested again. Keep social distancing and wear a mask. A message from the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
On New Beginnings, it's time for This Week in Review. Earlier this week, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked emergency powers in a bid to break up the so-called Freedom Convoy protest against coronavirus restrictions that clogged Ottawa's downtown and blocked trade access across key border crossings. The province is also lifting its 50% capacity cap on restaurants 4 days earlier than previously scheduled. In Texas, the attorney general there filed a lawsuit against Facebook's parent company, Meta Platforms, over the use of facial recognition technology, which the company has discontinued. The lawsuit requests hundreds of billions of dollars in civil penalties. Meta says in a statement that the claims were without merit and that its users were notified and given the opportunity to consent to the use of that technology. And did you hear the news about Tesla CEO Elon Musk? He donated more than 5 million Tesla shares to a charity last year. The donation was worth $5.7 billion. Tax experts say that Musk would get a huge tax benefit by gifting shares instead of selling them because he would avoid a capital gains tax. That's This Week in Review. I'm Freddie Bell. Now let's turn our attention to your financial health in retirement. And with us is Leibel Sternbach. He is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. So Leibel, let's pick up on that discussion where we started last week, downsizing in retirement. And there are a lot of reasons, as you told us earlier, Leibel, to downsize, especially right now.
Yeah, there's you want to be able to tap into that equity in your home and use it to fund your retirement. But in addition to that, you want to look at, you know, how can you use that event to fuel and further your lifestyle goal of what retirement looks like for you?
Everyone, we're talking with Leibel, and we have a question, Leibel, from Debbie, and she's asking, she says, I'm thinking of selling my house and getting a condo. She wants to know what the pros are, what the cons are, and she's wondering, Leibel, if you recommend it or is it better just to get a smaller house? What do you say?
So I think that the answer is really up to you. But I think that there are, you know, as we've been talking about this, there's financial and there's non-financial considerations. So we've talked about some of the non-financial considerations up until now, mm-hmm. which I think you do some soul searching, go to, you know, visit some friends who are living in condos, living in houses on their own. Especially, you know, go across the age demographics, right? Let's say you're in your 60s or your 70s right now and you're thinking about that. Go visit friends or find people who are in their 80s and 90s and see what they think about it, because chances are this is going to be the last move you make in your lifetime and you don't want to have to move again. So go find out, go get some information for yourself of what this will really look like. Once you know the non-financial side, right, the heart side of things, we got to talk about the finances, right? So let's get some down and dirty onto some of the finances that you got to consider. Sound good?
Yes, it does. So what would be the first one?
So the first thing that you got to look at is condo fees, right, or homeowner association fees. Unless you're going to be living in a house on your own that's not part of a community, you want to know what are the fees associated. And even if you're owning a home that's not part of an association, you want to look at what the fees that people experience are. So with homeowner associations, and let's talk specifically about a condo, because a lot of people look at a condo and they go, well, you know, they maintain the building, they maintain the landscaping, they have all these amenities. It's a great deal. If you've ever looked at a timeshare, or if you've been in a timeshare and regretted it, you know exactly what condos can do to you.
I'm raising my hand.
By owning that condo, you are kind of writing a blank check to whoever is managing the condo. They get to, at any time, assess your condo with fees. These fees can be, theoretically, they're voted on, right? But the fact is that nobody wants to be on the board of a condo association or the homeowners association. Very few people do. And once they're on there, it's very hard to remove them. So what ends up happening is that you get this little mafia on the board and they just pass whatever they want. So my mother-in-law lives in this little complex. It's got three buildings, all built by the same developer. The first building where the developer lived in was built amazing, right? That's where my mother-in-law lives in. Very sound structure, beautiful, nice, but it's not ostentatious. It's right in the middle. It's a nice building. The other two buildings he built afterwards. And the building that he built last, as his company was going bankrupt, has been under construction as long as I've been going down to that condo. Oh, there are so many structural problems with that building. And the board who is in that building is they've had members who had gone to jail for embezzlement. Somehow the board has decided that they want to redo their lobby, and they've redone it with $1 million worth of marble. And they have two full-time employees who are in the lobby at all times. I mean, literally you walk into this building and it's like the Waldorf. And it wasn't that way 5 years ago, wasn't that way 10 years ago. But at some point the board decided that they wanted to live in a building that looked like $1 million, and they assessed every condo with it. And I heard rumors that the renovation cost something like $10 million. And there's only like 100 and something units in that building. So they assessed everybody. It was like $5,000 to $10,000 a month to finance this renovation. And everyone, you know, you don't really have a say. Your only say is, well, you can try to sell it now, but who's going to buy it when it costs, you know, an extra $50,000 a year in condo fees?
How do you suss that out? How do you determine what's going to happen down the road? I mean, the Waldorf Astoria, I mean, it's a nice place, but in retirement, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah, so some of it is hard to figure out, but here are some tips that other retirees have said to look for. So, and this is coming from one of the Facebook groups I'm on. Somebody, you know, posted this question, and these are the suggestions that came out. So one of them, ask if there's any pending lawsuits against the developer of the property. Because if the person who's managing or built the property, so if the person who built the property is getting sued, that's an indication that there might be something wrong with the building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if the property management company is getting sued, that's an indication that you might have an assessment coming down the road. So you want to take a look at those. Another thing to ask is, are there any future development plans, right? Mm-hmm. Is there plans in the works to upgrade things? And if there are, right, you might want to find out what kind of numbers they're talking about and thinking about, because, you know, that's something that might be added to your bottom line. Another one, and this one I thought was a really great suggestion, if they will do it for you. Now, most condos are technically is public and they should provide it, okay, but they're kind of close-knit groups. Ask them for the last minutes of the minutes of their last board meeting, because that will give you an idea of what they're talking about and who the troublemakers are and kind of what the tone of the building is, right? Ask for that information. See what kind of response you get, and then look at the actual details, because that'll give you, you know, some kind of idea. And then the one that I love the best is just start knocking on doors and asking people, do you like living here? What do you think about it? You can also, a lot of people rent their apartments on Airbnb, stay there for a little bit, right? Come different times of the year and see who's there, mm-hmm, and talk to the people who are there, talk to the staff. Ask them, you know, what do they think is wrong? How do they like the fees? You know, do they think the fees are going up? Are they thinking about moving? This will pull out and tease out that information that you need to know to be able to make a decision. Because remember, when we are making financial decisions in retirement, we're not just making a decision about today and tomorrow. Every decision that we make has an impact for the rest of our life and potentially our children and grandchildren. Everything that we do needs to be thought out. During our working years, we have the safety net that is kind of provided to us in the form of we can always go back to work. Any mistake that we make is rarely fatal because we can earn more money. As we get older, our ability to go back into the workforce, our ability to recover from those mistakes becomes less and less. So that is, those are some tips and suggestions that I have for, you know, questions to think about, at least from the financial side.
So as you take in the financial side and you're looking at the non-financial side, it sounds like there's some introspection that needs to go on as you're making this type of, and I see it as a really big decision, Michael.
Yeah, this is one of those big decisions in life, right? I think that where you retire to is probably the biggest decision and will have the biggest impact on your long-term happiness, both because of the financial and non-financial reasons. And here, you know, when you're thinking about this decision, right, you got to think about what you want retirement to look like. What will it feel like, right? How will you spend your days? Does this apartment, does this condo, does this house, does that further those goals or not? Will it give me access to the amenities and the services that I need access to, right? So take me, right? I want to live by the beach, right? Being by the beach is important to me, right? I also want to be able to teach for the rest of my life, right? That's something important. So that means I need to live somewhere by a beach that's also near a public library or a college, somewhere where I can teach, right? So that limits my options. So think about what are the things that will make retirement feel like retirement for you. Then ask yourself the question, what is my potential downside in making this decision? Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the most powerful questions. It's something that I ask of every decision I make, right? If this goes south, what will happen? What are my bottom line, right? What is the downside for making this decision? And then ask yourself the flip side of that question. What is the cost for not making this decision? If I stay in my home as it is right now, what will that cost me? What will that mean, right? If you're living in a house that the same house that you raise your kids in, chances are it's got stairs. Chances are it is not friendly for somebody who has bum knees. Right. At some point, you aren't going to want to climb those stairs. Can you live on just the first floor? Is it handicap accessible? Is it easy and friendly for you to get around it? Right. Those are important questions to have. And then you got to ask yourself the question, right, for every decision you make. Right. Is the risk reward worth it? Right. Whether it's choosing to downsize, whether it's this condo versus another condo, this house versus that house. What is the risk? What is the potential reward, financial, non-financial? And is it worth it? And then really the ultimate question you got to ask, does this decision endanger my financial freedom, right? If I say yes to this, will it hurt my ability to stay retired for the long run?
Well, wow. Michael, do you talk about this in your book, Living with Financial Anxiety?
Absolutely. In my book, I give the exact steps to take for how to answer these questions and how to incorporate it in your everyday life.
It seems like this is so, the way you outline it, it sounds so practical, but it's so practical. I can see where a lot of people miss these, what you've outlined as fundamental steps in making some life-changing decisions with regard just simply to where I live and the resultant impact that it could have not only on my lifestyle, but on my financial security.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Making good financial decisions is about making good life decisions. The two are the same and they need to be habits.
If you go to Leibel's website, you can see that he does take you through the entire steps of how to make these decisions, when is the right time to convert. He talks about a simple formula. He can take your marginal tax rate. I mean, there's a lot of great practical information that you can find from Leibel. That's about all the time we have today. I'm Freddie Bell. I'm with Leibel Sternbach, and we're looking forward to seeing you on our very next episode. Leibel's website is LeibelOnFire.com. That's LeibelOnFire.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and let's focus on Vermont. Why? Well, because before peaking in mid-January, the nearly vertical ascent of the new coronavirus cases in Vermont affected nearly every mountain hamlet, every shuttered factory town, every college campus, despite its near-perfect vaccination record. Of all the states, Vermont appeared best prepared for the Omicron battle. It is the nation's most vaccinated state against COVID, with nearly 80% of residents fully vaccinated and 95% of residents age 65 and up. Yet, the state in mid-January hit record highs for residents hospitalized with COVID-19. And experts are quick to note that Vermont also serves as a window into what's possible as the United States learns to live with COVID. Although nearly universal vaccination could not keep the highly mutated Omicron variant from sweeping through the state, Vermont's collective measures do appear to be protecting residents from the worst of the contagion's damage. Vermont's COVID-related hospitalization rates, while higher than last winter's peak, still rank last in the nation. And overall death rates also rank comparatively low. Vermont, a state of just 645,000 residents, in many ways embodies the future that public health officials aim to usher in. High vaccination rates across all races and ethnicities, adherence to evolving public health guidelines, and a stick-to-itiveness and social cohesion when the virus is swarming. However, replicating Vermont's success may prove difficult. While other rural states in the Midwest and South have struggled to boost vaccination rates, New England in general is outpacing the pack. Behind Vermont, Rhode Island, Maine, and Connecticut have the highest percentages of fully vaccinated residents in the country. In a state with the model freedom and unity, freedom has largely yielded to unity, and the state's pandemic response has been met with eager compliance. The general attitude in that area has been enthusiasm to be safer. And once the Omicron wave passes and less virus is circulating, a highly vaccinated state like Vermont could really drop nearly all mitigation measures, and society could function much better. And while we're on the subject of viruses and Omicron, wearing any kind of mask indoors is associated with much better protection from the coronavirus, with high-quality N95 and KN95 masks providing the best chance of avoiding infection. That according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In indoor public settings, surgical masks reduce the chance of testing positive by 66%. Top-of-the-line N95 and KN95 masks, the tight-fitting face coverings often worn by healthcare officials, cut the odds of infection by 83%, the health agency is saying. Wearing a cloth mask appeared to lower the odds of testing positive by only 56%, but the findings were not statistically significant. The data reinforces the importance of consistently wearing face masks or respirators to reduce the risk of acquisitions of the infection among the general public in indoor community settings. I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. And joining us right now is Anthony Taylor, no stranger to the Twin Cities. He's a volunteer on the Executive Council, an Executive Council member of AARP. He's here today to talk about a network of age-friendly states and communities. Anthony Taylor, welcome back to the program.
It's really good to hear your voice. How are you doing?
Unbelievable, and Happy New Year. I believe this is the first time we've spoken this year.
It is. Thank you, and it's a beautiful day.
AARP just welcomed Minnesota as the 10th state to join the AARP network of age-friendly states and communities. What does that mean, and what is the significance, Tony?
Well, the AARP Network of Age-Friendly Community targets improvements in what we think of as eight domains that influence health and quality of life for all of us as we age. And so the communities participating in the AARP Network of Age-Friendly Communities commit to improving their livability through assessments and really needs. And for me, it was exciting. This work began years ago where we really started out just looking at bikeability and walkability in areas like 38th Street, Broadway Avenue. There's eight area focuses. One is outdoor spaces and buildings, transportation, housing, social participation, respect and social inclusion, civic participation and employment, communication and information, and then most importantly, and not lastly, community support and health services.
I would imagine right now that that last one, number eight, is really big, especially here in the Twin Cities.
Well, it's really everywhere. And I think that actually the idea of community support and health services on its face looks relatively narrow. But I think what we find is that right now, in a moment where social isolation is critical, this also relates to our emotional well-being, right? Mm-hmm. And then isolation also relates to our civic and participation. And for most of us, and including you and I as we make this call right now and do this interview, there is a significantly different way that we are working, right? And so our employment and all that means for us is really changing. And the impact on our adult communities is actually more acute.
We're talking with Anthony Taylor, AARP Minnesota Volunteer Executive Council member, and we're talking about age-friendly states and communities. And the legislature and Governor Walz has had a lot to do with this.
Governor Walz has really been supportive of this, that what he formed, and I was really a member of this amazing group of people, he established the Governor's Council on Age-Friendly Minnesota, and we really were charged with developing recommendations for his office in the legislature. This was really based on recommendations in 2021, but now we've extended this through 2024 fiscal year. We've appropriated an actual operational budget for it. We're going to be choosing a director, and really, we're going to be able to get to work in terms of anchoring this work inside of our legislative work in Minnesota.
I saw it's $3.9 million. How long does that cover? What is the span for that expenditure of that appropriation?
This appropriation will really allow us to work through 2024, right? And that really the council is currently developing a criteria for how local governments and nonprofits can apply for a state's age-friendly grant program. It's going to be a grant program and a technical assistance program that we're going to be that will be available July of 2022.
Do you have a final thought about age-friendly Minnesota?
I think that the biggest thing around age-friendly Minnesota for me, because it naturally wound up being intersectional work, Freddie. When you look at the idea of aging well, aging in place, we wound up being intersectional work that looks at work. That looks at race, that looks at income, that looks at class, that looks at housing and stability. And inside of that work, we know there is an actual commitment to equity as well. And this is the part of the work that really, again, anchored in intersectionality, is that equitable outcomes for all of our citizens is foundational work. Governor Walz's support for this has been significant. And AARP is a leader, not just in aging communities, but in community well-being broadly. And it's been really a proud moment to work with this team.
How can we get more information, sir?
You will actually be able to go to our website for more information personally. You can also get information on the community challenge grants at www.aarp.org/mn.
Anthony Taylor, I can't thank you enough for being with us.
Thank you for all you do for building community well-being.
That's Anthony Taylor, and this is New Beginnings. And as you're listening to New Beginnings, you're likely having a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage. From Seoul to Seattle and even to the Twin Cities area, the soaring cost of coffee beans is trickling into the cups of consumers like you. Some of the world's biggest roasters and sellers of coffee are raising menu prices, having flagged that customers would be paying more as beans began to surge last year. Higher wages and other costs have also added to the rising charge for a daily cup, which is in turn increasing the inflationary pressures coursing through the global economy. Futures for Arabica coffee jumped 76% last year, hitting decades high after droughts and once-in-a-generation frost damaged crops in Brazil, the world's top producer. The next 12 to 18 months will be tough for the consumer, and it is expected that prices will begin to rally later on this year. And even as the prices continue to go up, coffee experts don't expect that consumption will go down. A fractured supply chain where roasters are having to pay large prices for shipping containers has forced some coffee traders to revert to chartering break bulk vessels. Margins have been squeezed, but also various market participants were behind the curve and waiting for a dip in the market that never came. I'm seeing where Starbucks is planning to continue raising menu prices again this year after doing so in October and in January. Their CEO, Kevin Johnson, told investors on an earnings call Tuesday that a price hike is inevitable. That follows South Korea's Tom and Tom's, which also says it would be increasing the retail cost of its coffee, of its cappuccinos, lattes, and Americanos by 25%, citing the higher price of coffee beans. Here are today's words to the wise. Hearing is only part of the equation. Take time to listen. Hearing is only part of the equation. Take time to listen. Words to the wise, and you can find it in my brand new book, Words to the Wise, available on FreddieBell.com, Amazon, and Barnes & Noble. That's it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for making us a part of your week. And for everyone who's been a part of this one, this is Freddie Bell saying goodbye for now. And remember, every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.